This meeting is being recorded. Good morning. It is 8:32 a.m. on Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. And this is the regular session meeting of the Board of Physical Therapy. Dr. Bastillo, after you call this meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting on March 26, 2024 of the State Board of Physical Therapy to order.
Thank you. Dr. Bastillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer. Mr. Barton.
Here.
And staff, Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Ms. Sinish.
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius. At this time, Mr. Greer is not with us, although we do expect him to join later. So if the minutes can reflect his absence at this time. And Dr. King, the mission statement, please.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to take a moment to read the PT board's mission statement. The mission of the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence, and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses and certifies qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees and certificate holders.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dr. King. Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
Okay, so the first item on the agenda is to review and approve the minutes from the February 27th, 2024 meeting, regular session. Any updates or changes that need to be made?
No, I make a motion that we approve the regular session minutes from February 27th, 2024.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the February 27th, 2024 regular session meeting minutes. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer? Absent. Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so item 4A, applicants requesting ADA accommodations. We have Morgan Quiris. I saw that she was on the call.
Yes, she is.
Okay. Do we have, like a summary?
Yes, I'll give that to you. So in your board materials, you received a memorandum of the license or certification application for Americans with Disability Act ADA accommodations request for Morgan Curris, who was requesting the following accommodations: additional time and a half, an additional time of double time. It's important to note that only one, if this is granted, only one can be selected and granted. The items include the board's application for approval of the testing accommodations and Ms. Kouris's application for licensure or certification. So it's up to the board to determine whether the applicant shall be granted the accommodations requested for the National Physical Therapy Exam and or the AZ Jurisprudence Exam. If the board approves the request, Ms. Curris will be allowed to complete the application process by registering and taking the NPTE and or the AZ Law Exam. Board staff recommends the motion also state that this applicant will be granted physical therapy license or physical therapist assistant certification upon receiving a completed application, including passing scores on the required exams and final and official transcripts from the college and university.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Corris, would you be willing to answer any questions that the board may have for you?
Of course.
Great. I guess my biggest question is, you've requested time and a half, but there's also the request for double time. Do you have one or the other that would be better for you?
I honestly do not have much of a preference. Either one would be extremely helpful.
Okay. And you've done time and a half for some of your other coursework and
yes.
things like that.
Yes.
And that's been adequate for you?
Yeah, it's been definitely sufficient.
Ms. Corris, it's Dr. King. Quick question. Other than exams and the stress of taking an exam, what other situations in your life has this newer diagnosis of epilepsy affected? And what other stressful situations in your life have set you off to potentially have a seizure?
So I've been very lucky that I've been very controlled on my epilepsy, and so far I have only had two big seizures, but with stress, I can have more of absent seizures. So one of my harder times, I guess you could say, was moving up to Flagstaff at first for school is when I kind of started having absent seizures, trying to adjust. But luckily I have not had anything like that in 3 or so years now. So.
Okay. And I think I read in your application that one of your strategies is to communicate your emergency plan to someone. What would be your plan on for that around the exam?
So for my first exam, I did the same thing as well. I took in a paper and I kind of wrote down that I'm epileptic. I wrote some emergency phone numbers and I just let whoever is there just know, hey, if this happens, here's the steps. Unless I hit my head, please don't call an ambulance, please call my husband. And I kind of do the same with work, and I have done it throughout my schooling, and it's been good so far.
And speaking of work and just maybe think of clinical rotations in PT school, were you given any accommodations as far as extra time for an evaluation or any other accommodations in your clinical rotations?
Not in my clinical rotations, no, but during school I did have the option for extra time on exams, especially when I was starting trying to figure out the flow of PT school. But as for clinic, things run pretty normally.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Corris, I saw on your application, the accommodations for college exams and things like that, you had mentioned on there, you had the ability to leave class for disability related issues. What would constitute a disability related issue that you would have had to leave the exam or leave the classroom during the exam for?
If we were in class and it would be random kind of, but I'd get an aura. So I'd get a very lightheadedness and I'd start to feel really anxious, and I would step out, go outside, kind of sit down, take some breaths, try and reset to avoid anything from further escalating that way. But that's kind of where it would stop in PT school. Probably happen a handful to 10 times.
Okay. Is that something that typically comes on right before you're going to have a seizure?
It can, but my two big seizures that I did have, I didn't have that happen. So it's just something for me to kind of be aware of as it's happening.
Okay. Thank you.
So Ms. Corris, I saw that in your application you wrote none on the accommodations that you had previously had for the National Physical Therapy Exam. Is that because have you taken this previously without accommodations?
I did. So I did take it without accommodations, and I did feel especially towards the middle to end, that I was having a lot of brain fog, which is something that comes with, as a side effect, is one of my medications, but that I was having a lot harder time pushing through that, and I was watching the time run out, so that kind of made it worse as well.
Okay. So it seems like your current condition is fairly well controlled with medications, but those medications give you a brain fog. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And does that brain fog affect other aspects of your life? Does it affect, do you need to take special care or accommodations in aspects other than test taking?
No, not that I have run into or found yet.
Is there something have you found any kind of solution to this brain fog that you utilize outside of a testing environment that works for you?
Definitely being able to kind of take a second and breathe and step back and just try and recollect my thoughts and reapproach the question or situation that I'm in. At first, it happened a lot in clinic when I was doing our pro bono clinic at school. If I was kind of more nervous going in, it would get a little bit worse and I would just remind myself to breathe and then proceed forward.
Okay. And would you had to take breaks during your clinic time for the same reason?
Yeah. So I would just ask like the professor if we could step out and kind of talk over what I was thinking, just to, one, make sure I was on the right track, and two, kind of give me a second to buffer it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? I'm going to make a motion that we grant her request for time and a half for the MPTE and AZ law exam.
I will second.
Any further discussion? Okay. Let's call the question, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Morgan Curris's request for ADA accommodations of time and a half. Dr. Basile.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer, I see that you've joined.
I'll abstain from this one.
Thank you. Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck on the examinations.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So we'll go down to C, review, consideration, and possible action on PT applicant graduated from foreign educational program, Melissa Warren.
Yes, this particular applicant has been before you previously and was approved. Her application expanded beyond the required 360 days, so she had to submit a new application. Therefore, we had to bring her back to the board to request review of it. So attached to the memorandum was the application for Melissa Warren, a foreign educated physical therapist who graduated from a program that is not U.S. accredited by the Commission on Accreditation of Physical Therapy Education, or known as CAPTE. Ms. Warren's foreign education was found to be substantially equivalent through the educational credentialing process, and board staff is requesting a review of that credential evaluation in light of the requirements in ARS 32-2022-E3, AAC R4-24-203A, and R4-24-10112. Her accreditation scores and metrics were identified in the grid, and as previously stated, Ms. Warren was presented in December at the December 12th meeting. She's being presented again with a new application for after her current application exceeded the 360 days. So it's requested that the board review that information to determine if she would be considered substantially equivalent to that of a U.S. educated graduate, whether she allow her to sit to the end for the NPTE and AZ law and require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours.
Is Ms. Warren on the call?
I think
yes, I'm here.
Great. Would you be willing to answer any questions from the board?
Certainly.
Anyone have questions or concerns? Are you living in Arizona currently?
Yes.
It's Dr. King, quick question. I don't think I saw, have you practiced in the United States at all? Have you had a supervised clinical practice or any sort of practice in the United States?
I have all of my practice in Canada.
That's right. Okay. Okay. Right. Okay.
Any other questions?
I would move to approve the education as substantially equivalent.
A second. Would you be willing to add the 500 hours of supervised clinical practice? That?
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is do we have to make that a separate motion or can we make it all in the same motion?
Yeah, I don't know. Good question.
Typically you make it in the same motion you have.
Okay.
Does it also include allowing us to grant eligibility to test for the NPTE and the AZ law exam?
Yes.
Okay. Second, that's my second.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All right.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve Melissa Warren's education as substantially equivalent and allow her to sit for the NPTE and AZ law and require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Perfect. Best of luck to you, Ms. Warren. Good luck with all your testing and welcome to Arizona.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me, I just wanted to mention that for the record that Mr. Greer did join the meeting. We will timestamp that later. It was prior to the previous vote.
I recorded it at 8:45.
Thank you. Somebody's on the ball. That's a good thing. Dr. King.
Not Mr. Greer, but that was because of traffic, so.
Yeah, I don't envy you.
Okay, I believe we're at the consent agenda, Dr. Basile.
Yeah, so number 5 is the consent agenda. We have one item on that. Are we good with that, or do we need to discuss?
No, I make a motion that we terminate the board order for Janelle Wartenberg.
Second.
Who did that second? I'm sorry.
I think everyone did that second.
Everyone. I'll take Lucio. Thank you.
Okay. Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
Perfect. It's been moved and seconded to approve consent agenda item 5C, Janelle Wartenberg, for termination of order. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Wonderful. Okay, so there's nothing under 6, 7, or 8. And so now we're on to number 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters for review, consideration, and action. So we have initial reviews and preliminary reviews. And I have a script that I need to read before we begin that. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 4 initial reviews and 2 preliminary review cases for the board to consider. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board will conduct initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. First, I will begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. I will now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Kelly King, physical therapist, board vice president.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, board secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we will ask those speaking not to take time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy, after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior, will be removed from the meeting. Once the board concludes its discussion with parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt this process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and then only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the cases require additional investigation, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. So our first case is 2389 Michael Webster, PT. And is this Mindy that has the?
Yes, it is. And I just want to make sure that Mr. Webster and his attorney, Cynthia Petain, is on the call.
This is Cynthia Petain. We are both here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is case 2389. Mr. Webster self-reported on December 6th of 2023 that he engaged in a personal relationship with a patient. In his written response that we received January 4th of 2024, he states that after he transferred this patient to another therapist, He met the patient 3 times at a restaurant, and the relationship did not progress beyond a friendship. However, the female patient, AVS, subsequently attested that a sexual relationship took place while she was receiving PT services from Mr. Webster, and the HR investigation that was completed by the employer described elements of sexual misconduct and professional boundary violations during the time that AVS was a patient of Mr. Webster's. Mr. Webster and his attorney were provided a copy of the investigative report. He did not provide a supplemental written response, but did provide a letter from his healthcare provider, which was included as Exhibit 5 in your materials. And then on March 20th, the board subsequently received a psychiatric evaluation of Mr. Webster that was dated November 21st of 2023, and that was included separately in review materials as a late submission. The following possible statute violations are identified for your consideration. ARS 32-2044-10, engaging in sexual misconduct. For the purposes of this paragraph, sexual misconduct includes A, engaging in or soliciting sexual relationships, whether consensual or non-consensual, while a provider-patient relationship exists. B, making sexual advances, requesting sexual favors, or engaging in other verbal conduct or physical conduct of a sexual nature with a patient. ARS 32-2044-8, practicing as a physical therapist or working as a physical therapist assistant when physical or mental abilities are impaired by disease or trauma, by the use of controlled substances or other habit-forming drugs, chemical or alcohol, or by other causes. ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession as it relates to Principle 2, a physical therapist shall act in a trustworthy manner toward patients and clients and in all other aspects of physical therapy practice. And Principle 4, a physical therapist shall exercise sound professional judgment. ARS 32-2044-18, interfering with an investigation or disciplinary proceeding by failing to cooperate by willful misrepresentation of facts or by the use of threats or harassment against any patient or witness to prevent the patient or witness from providing evidence in a disciplinary proceeding or legal action. And ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate records as it relates to R-424-304, adequate patient records. This case is for your review.
Mr. Webster or Ms. Batain, would you like to make an opening comment?
Yes, this is Cynthia Batain. I'm here with Michael Webster, and I'm the attorney representing him. So good morning, President Bustillo and members of the board. And thank you for inviting us to the meeting today. In 2022 and 2023, Mr. Webster experienced some significant medical issues and the end of a long-term relationship. And those events combined to create some struggles that he experienced with his mental and emotional health. He remained committed to his practice, and he stands by the services that he provided during that time period. But those emotional and mental issues did impact his judgment in maintaining professional boundaries with the complainant, and thus we find ourselves here today. Mr. Webster is remorseful that he did not maintain appropriate professional boundaries. He has gotten the help that he needs in all aspects of his health, including the mental, emotional, and physical. And for the path forward, he wants nothing more to continue to practice physical therapy and to help his patients get better. He's hopeful that an agreement can be offered by the board that would allow him to do that while balancing the board's mandate to protect the public. And so with that said, he is here today to answer your questions and give you any additional information that you may need. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Webster?
Just a quick question. Is the complainant on the call as well, Mindy?
No. She was reluctant to participate.
Okay. Thank you. I'll have a few questions. I'll start with a few, and then we'll go from there. So
can I just clarify? He did self-report.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So there wasn't per se.
So he was his own complainant.
Yes.
If I remember correctly. So Mr. Webster, we appreciate you self-reporting. Question though, why didn't you self-report earlier? because this was October, like fall of 23. We're now in March of 24. What took you so long to come to the board?
Well, so one of the things is that I did not realize that the regulation prohibiting sexual misconduct encapsulated kissing. I do realize it now, and I do have a much greater appreciation of where that boundary starts.
So if I hear you correctly, you didn't realize that having a relationship with a patient that included kissing was considered sexual misconduct.
Yes, that is correct. And the patient had been transferred to a different therapist.
Were there any other complaints during that time to your clinic manager or HR about your services? Any concerns by the staff about your mental health, your clinical decisions, your judgments, interactions with other people?
Well, my employer was aware that I was going through a lot of challenging physical conditions. I had several periods of break because of surgeries and recoveries, and they were aware of the physical challenges I was having, and the human resources had connected me to our EAP, I think is what it was referred to, so there was counseling services for that. But in regards to my behavior, my employer did not restrict my ability to treat or interact. That there wasn't anything that my employer was doing in terms of any kind of correctable action, and we work in an open gym environment. It's not as if we're in private rooms, or the space itself is just one large room. We literally do not have treatment rooms in our clinic. So I don't know what that, but they were made aware of the, complaint by the patient. I can't remember the exact date, but, she did put a complaint into my employer. And so, it was a complaint about, she said that I wouldn't leave her alone, but the actual truth was, and I showed my employer that it was just exactly the opposite. She was in pursuit of a relationship with me. And because I wasn't interested in that relationship, that's when she decided to report it to my employer. If that makes sense.
Were there any other complaints around that time about you by your staff members, by people that worked with you, any other patients, any HR situations during that time of what was described as significant health and mental health issues?
Oh, no, there wasn't any complaints about my mental health issues, no, ma'am. No, I think I would say this, that the work environment is the one space that I was actually that space was probably the one space that was unaffected by my the troubles outside of my outside of work. And my kids had left that. My kids had emancipated and left that spring as well. But so work was the one place that I could finally be myself. That was the one place that I didn't, you know, my physical ailments didn't impact that part of my life at all. And so I actually got a tremendous amount of joy just being at work, because there was just a lot of things I was going through outside of work, but work was the one place I could be myself and felt like I could really have value. So work, in a sense, it was sort of my refuge when I was going through those difficult times.
Thank you.
Mr. Webster, this is Joshua Greer, and I don't need all the lurid details, and there may not be any, but tell me in your own words how this relationship came about, and you know, what exactly this relationship with AVS was.
Yes, sir. So, and I can't remember the exact timelines, but she became a patient of mine last summer. She had, in our system, our phone system is really lousy, and most of the therapists, and it wasn't anything that I'd even thought of, but the other managers, when I was sitting in a meeting, the other managers were talking about bypassing our phone system, which was having a terrible time getting information to the therapist, making changes to the schedule. So her and I started a text message exchange where I said she could, you know, if she had to change her appointment up or she wasn't going to be able to make it, that she could just text me, and I'd have to be much easier way for us to make accommodations for her in the scheduling. And if you were to look at her records, you'd see she was a very inconsistent participant anyway. I think there was her plan of care, I think, was twice a week, but I think she was, I'm not even sure if she averaged a once a week visit there until she was transferred to one of the other therapists in the clinic. So there was flirtation in those text messages, but I was aware that, you know, there was certain physical limitations that I had that would preclude any kind of what I considered a sexual relationship. But I will admit there was flirtatious conversations. And then after she was transferred to a fellow therapist in the clinic, Bethany Hightower, we met three separate occasions at a place called Uncle Bear's, and we had a dinner and a few drinks, and I did kiss her goodnight. And at this point, I'm considering her as a patient that's no longer my patient. But she came back for she herself scheduled herself back onto my schedule, and it's a little bit hard to explain, but our system is so dependent on outside scheduling services. It wasn't like she was calling me to put her back on my schedule. She was calling my system at Ortho Arizona. So she just got dropped back into my schedule, and she got three visits, and I did continue to see her. I looked at Bethany's report. I was hoping that she was going to stay on Bethany's schedule because, she was a non-operative ruptured ACL. And I was trying to, the doctor that was the physician of record refused to do surgeries because of her age and her weight. So, I thought maybe she does dry needling and she does scraping and things that I don't do on my strengths are in functional exercise and patterning. So, transferring her to Bethany Hightower was just a way of offering up some different mechanisms to try to control her pain, which she was reporting was as an 8 or 9 out of 10 pain. So I was pretty concerned about that. And I also referred her to get a second opinion within our own system. There's two surgeons in our system that also are do frequent ACL patients, reconstructions and things like that. And even with patients that are older than her. So I thought maybe, that would be another option is a second set of eyes on her, from a surgeon standpoint to see if there's some other option. And so, and I wasn't privy to all the physician of records recommendations about whether, you know, how overweight was she. I'm not sure what different, contraindications that he saw, but so it was certainly not your typical, case by any stretch, between, you know, just the fact that she was this fully ruptured ACL patient that, wasn't going to get surgery. She had exceptionally pain and none of my interventions seemed to be making much of a difference. So she came back for three times, and then I never saw her, out publicly again after that. We started back up having conversations, well after that. And right when we started having conversations back up and it regarded, you know, some potential for us to have a relationship, I just wasn't interested. And that prompted her complaint as far as I'm not wanting to speak for her, but, the, she was very upset that I wasn't interested in continuing a relationship. So I hope, I know that was really.
Well, yeah, let's unpack a little bit of that. Do you recall after how many visits you transferred her to Ms. or Dr. Hightower?
I think it's 11. We have the notes in here.
Okay. And
yeah,
I think I understood, but I just want to make sure I understood what you just told me. Was the decision to transfer her as a result of the personal relationship, or was it a result of her plan of care?
Oh, no. I mean, I was there. I'll have to admit that I was afraid of the appearance of impropriety. I didn't. That's the one thing that I can really hold on to from when I look back at last year, was that I was still exceptionally dedicated to my patients. And if you look at her pain reports and, you look at her, Bethany's progress note and my progress note that when she came back, was that it just felt like we were spinning our wheels with functional training. So my interest was to get Bethany, not because she needed a different exercise strategy. I felt really confident in that, but I'm not trained in dry needling. I'm not trained in scraping. So I thought that there might be a possibility that, and I had been speaking to Bethany anyway about what approaches she might take. And so that was my only interest, but I was certainly concerned about the appearance of impropriety, but that was not my intention with the patient was just to simply get her out of the terrific amount of pain she was in.
Okay. You mentioned some flirtatious texts, and I've seen in at least the report that we have numerous references to what are called, explicit pictures. And they might be more innocent than that. I don't see them and I don't need you to describe them, but I believe there was some exchange of, what is described of some pictures. Do you agree with that? Is that something that you believe happened?
Well, I mean, they're certainly flirtatious pictures. They were pictures of her. She traveled a lot, so she was always pictures of her.
Like I said, I'm not trying to be too personal. I'm just trying to make sure I understand. She sent you pictures that may not be inappropriate, but were definitely flirtatious.
Yes.
Did you reciprocate? Did you send her pictures of you that may not have been appropriate, but were flirtatious?
Yeah. I would say like gym pictures and things like that. Working. We talked a lot about my exercise habits as well. And ideas for her to get back into shape when her body would allow her to. So I'd spoken to her about helping her with fitness programs after she was done with rehabilitation to like go to the gym or whatever. And so we had lots of conversations like that, offering up that type of help for her. She was on access, so it wasn't like she had a ton of resources. And so, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I'm just, you're giving me a lot more information than I really need. I'm just trying to understand the time frame of those pictures. Were those pictures while she was a treating patient with you, or were those when she was sent to refer to Ms. Hightower, or both?
No, I think that would be after. Yeah.
Okay. And in your mind, did those exchange of pictures ever get to what you would call a sexual as opposed to just exercise? Were these lingerie pictures? Were these underwear pictures? Were they pictures like that at any time?
I'm trying to recall that, and there was a lot of exchanges during that time, but mostly they were just about where she was and what she was doing, that's kind of a gray question,
that's fine. You can only give me the answer that you can give me, and I don't want you to remember something, but. Did you ever feel that those pictures crossed the boundary from just flirtatious to more sexually explicit photographs?
Well, just so I can, I want to make sure I understand the question. So you mean like to be provocative, like with
yeah,
the picture?
That's a great clarification.
Oh no, I don't think so. I mean, they were flirtatious, you know, I got my hair done. This is my cute outfit. This is, you know, I worked my shoulders today. That was the context of our conversations up to that point.
And my last question, and never trust a lawyer when he says it's his last question. There's mention in the records about a 3-minute voicemail message that you left AVS.
Yes.
Do you remember? Tell me what you can remember about that and how that came to be.
Well, yeah. So somehow I can't tell you. I mean, and I'm an older guy, so cell phones sometimes baffle me. But somehow, some way, I was in bed and having a conversation with the person that was in bed with me, and it was recorded. And this had been months after last time I'd seen her in person. She heard it, and that was certainly the catalyst for her to see whatever she could do to disrupt my life. But it had to do with the conversation I was having with somebody else that was in bed with me at the time.
So it wasn't intended to see how it last, don't trust
no.
me.
It wasn't intended
to send to her. It was sent to her.
Absolutely. Yeah. When she mentioned it, I had no idea what she was talking about at first. But that's when she started saying she was going to destroy my life and hurt me in any way she could.
Okay. Those are all the questions I think I have for you. I may think of others. One point of order for Mr. Harris. I don't think I have any questions about the late submission, but if someone did have questions, would that be appropriate to go into executive session to discuss those, or can we discuss those in open session?
What I would do is ask if he would prefer to have that discussed in executive session, and if he would, then move into executive session.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
And I don't have any questions right now about it, but I just wanted to know what my options were. Thank you, Mr. Harris. Dr. Bastillo, that's all I have.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions for Mr. Webster? Mr. Webster, would you or your attorney like to make a closing statement?
Do you want to make a closing? I don't think so. I tried to
sprinkle in some of the things that I wanted to make sure that I mentioned, but I just physical therapy isn't so important to me, not just for my own existence, but I feel like that one of the jobs for an experienced therapist is to be a steward for the upcoming generations, and I certainly failed at some point for that, but it's certainly my every intention to stay true to that goal and aspiration I have.
Mr. Webster, I told you I'd think of something. Have you taken any courses on boundaries? I think I saw something that you had.
Yeah, we do. It's OrthoArizona is a pretty big company, and I worked for Banner before that, so we do annual continuing education courses, and those always include issues in regards to boundaries. Although I would say that it's much more focused on boundaries between coworkers, not patients.
But you haven't taken a course on professional boundaries recently, like a specific course solely on professional boundaries.
I got an email. I thought maybe it was from you guys that was some kind of a continuing ed course, but you guys haven't sent anything. The board hasn't sent anything to me, is it? That's mandatory in terms of. I got something in my email, but nothing from you guys. Yeah. So no, I wouldn't say specific to this item. No.
Okay.
No. And
thank you.
I'd be more than willing to participate any and all opportunities there.
Okay. We will go into discussion at this point then. So I feel like we're really looking at most of the issues around ARS 32, 20, 44, 12, 8, and 10, and maybe not looking at 32, 20, 44, 18, or 20 as much right now. Does that seem to be?
I agree, Dr. Bustillo, and I was kind of more looking at it in reverse.
Oh, fair enough.
I think this is a definite professional boundaries issue.
Yeah.
And where I would like to go, and Mr. Harris will have to guide me if we can do this, I would like him to take a intensive professional boundaries course, mm-hmm. something Pro B or equivalent. Is that something I can do in a non-disciplinary consent agreement, or is that something that's got to be a disciplinary consent agreement?
That would have to be disciplinary.
So where I'm thinking is I would offer the licensee a disciplinary consent agreement where he would take a intensive professional boundaries course, and if he doesn't accept, I would invite him back for an informal hearing. Interview, whatever. So I'll make that as a motion. We can continue our discussion, but that's kind of what I'm thinking. As far as the allegations going, you know, I would, just to give staff, I agree with you that I see the violation of 4410. And then 4412, I think.
Yeah.
And those are the allegations I'm focused on. But that would be my motion.
Yeah. I'll second your motion. I feel that would be something very helpful.
And so just for clarification, the motion is just to take a disciplinary action consent agreement, including probation, so not any probation or anything like that, just the intent.
The probation would be he'd be on probation until he finished I don't know exactly how the sausage gets made there, but
you know, okay,
this would be one where if he got on and took that ethics course immediately, you know, I don't really would see a need for any time of long-term probation, but I know our staff is really good at drafting these things. And I hope I've given them enough information of what I want. Mark, have I?
Yeah, I think so. And just to clarify, perhaps a 6-month period of probation and it'll be completes it earlier.
Early termination.
Early release.
Exactly.
Okay.
And Josh, are you thinking just the course, or are you thinking the course that has the follow-up, like, sessions with the professional?
The really, really intensive one. That's the one I'm thinking of.
I think that one does have the follow-up.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
And I think it's like 12 weeks or 12 so
weeks.
I'm just worried that 6 months might not be enough. I don't know how it goes, right? Did they meet once a week? If they meet every other week? I don't know how it goes. But I would be inclined to maybe think a longer probation, giving him more time to make sure he gets that completed before the 6 months, if you would consider that.
Like 9 months?
Yeah, and I would consider that.
Okay.
I don't know. Can we have indefinite probation until it's completed, Mr. Harris? Because that would be simpler, but no.
No, I like to put I think boards like to put a specific period of time just so it doesn't drag out.
Yeah. So I would take that friendly amendment, and I don't know if we did get a second of pushing that out to 12 months just to give Mr. Webster sufficient time to complete the process. And you know, Pro B is the one I'm familiar with. I know there are others out there. I'm not advocating a particular course, just a particular type of course. So yeah. Pro B or the equivalent. And I think that can be taken online now. It used to be in person only, but I think it's online now.
Yes, those courses are online. The one that you are referring to is PBI Education, most likely. So if it's acceptable, it would be written as PBI Education or Pro B or equivalent, including the extended post course. The words fail me right now. The extended version.
Yeah, the PBI one or the CPEP one. I'm just Googling. That's kind of what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's typically PBI or Pro B.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mr. Harris, do we need to have a separate motion to adopt findings of fact?
I could have misunderstood or misheard, but I thought he, Mr. Greer's motion referenced the findings of fact that support violations of 10 and 12.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. That matches my notes. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready for the question, Judy.
Okay. In case number 2389, Michael Webster, it was moved and seconded to reference the findings of facts in the investigative report that referred to violations of ARS 32-2044-10 and 32-2044-12, and offer a disciplinary consent agreement to include 12 months of probation with the possibility of early termination after successful completion of the continuing education course, an extended version of professional boundaries, as similar to PBI education or Pro B education. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Right. So the board will be in touch with you, Mr. Webster, about getting these classes set up, helping you do that.
Thank you.
Okay. So do you need to redo the recording, Judy, or are we good?
Yeah, I would like to. It's 9:31. We're going to stop the recording and restart it momentarily.